Welcome to the Global Investor Podcast, a show that focuses on helping foreign investors enter the lucrative U.S. real estate market. Host Charles Carrillo combines decades of real estate investing experience with a professional background in international banking to interview experts in all areas of U.S. real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Charles Carrillo.
Welcome to another episode of the Global Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Charles Carrillo. Today we have Bronson Hill. He has been interviewed on episode GI-132, so you can look back, but we have him on again today. And he is a general partner in 2,000 multifamily units worth over $200 million. And he has spoken individually with over 1,500 investors and has raised over $40 million from those investors for his real estate and his ATM funds, while also co-leading a large in-person multifamily meetup in Glendale, California, and hosting his own podcast. Bronson, thank you so much for being back on the show again.
Hey, Charles, really excited to be here. Love talking all things real estate. I've always loved talking with you and being on your show. And just, man, there's so much to talk about these days, isn't there?
Yeah, that's for sure. Understatement. So before we jump into it, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, both personally and professionally, prior to getting involved with real estate and what you're doing now?
What can I tell you about myself? I do Spartan races, which are a lot of fun. I do these, you know, say, why would you punish yourself? Anybody's listening to David Goggins. I like, you know, try to create more pain in your life so that you enjoy the other parts of your life, I guess. That's one personal thing. My background is medical device sales. Did that for 10 years. I was a well-paid medical sales professional. Was working 30 hours a week, making over $200,000 a year. But the thing I didn't have is what a lot of people wrestle with is you can make a lot of money, but really we don't necessarily want financial freedom. What we really want is time freedom, right? It's the ability to be free in time. And so I had a single family portfolio, was trying to kind of scale that up, realized I was kind of creating another job for myself, didn't want to do that. There's a saying, when the student is ready, the teacher appears, found a mentor and said, why don't you consider multifamily? Or why don't you consider apartments? I said, I'd love to, but I don't have the money. He said, you can actually raise the money. So I learned about raising money for real estate and for other types of deals. And it's just been a great ride. I left my corporate job about 2.5 years ago. I wrote this book behind me called Fire Yourself. So I fired myself about 2.5 years ago. And the book's just really about replacing working income with passive income in 3 years or less, and just ways to do that in Main Street instead of Wall Street. So that's a little bit of my background.
Why did you choose real estate back then when you're getting into single family versus other potential asset classes and investment strategies?
Well, real estate is one of those things that, you know, a lot of people, I mean, I think just about everybody I know, most people know that real estate is kind of how people become wealthy, right? Over time through real estate. And I think, I think there's a quote by Andrew Carnegie, who was the wealthiest man in the world at the time, 100 years ago. He said 90% of millionaires, which was a lot bigger of a deal, made millionaire 100 years ago than it is now. But he said 90% were made through real estate. And so, you know, real estate, we all kind of know we should be doing something in real estate. I've always kind of had that vision. I thought single family would get me there. And I didn't realize it would really just kind of created another job for me. That's why when I talk to people, I've had all these calls with investors. A lot of people own a rental house or a vacation house, or they've got three houses. And I say, well, if you 10X your strategy, if you went from three houses to 30 houses, how would that be for you? And their eyes just about bug out of their head, even though they're not the property manager usually, but they still have a lot of work to do. They're getting calls. The tenants are doing this. They've got to repair this. They've got a storm thing. They're figuring all these things along the way. And so that's where, when people truly can become passive in investing, and that's what real estate offers, is you're not running a business. You're not running, I mean, it is a business, but it's something that, especially as a passive investor, someone else can be running that business for you. And I think until you're someone who's a limited partner, it's very, very difficult to actually be passive and to actually have the, you know, like I've traveled 6 times internationally last year, right? I've got Mount Everest. I'm doing an Everest base camp hike, you know, for 2 weeks coming up in April. Like I can do these trips because I know that I've got partners that can kind of handle the operation. So I think that's the appeal of real estate, is obviously, you know, there's some other benefits too, tax benefits, and there's appreciation, and there's using leverage to get to use other people's money just by using debt, which helps you hedge inflation. So there's definitely a lot of benefits to real estate for sure.
Yeah, no, it's possible. I've met people that have been able to turn their own portfolio into a business. However, there is, it's just like scaling any type of business. You know what I mean? It's very difficult, you know? So it's one of those things, is just that people don't have it in them. I mean, it's just, it takes a lot of time. It takes, and to put all those processes in place in the beginning. And it's just much easier if your whole goal is actual passive income, not to be a real estate property manager, to go into the passive route through syndication. That's what I found myself and my own portfolio as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and that's something I think, you know, no matter what your role is, a lot of people we work with, they have a business, or, you know, they have been doing it for 20 years and, or maybe they're a professional, they're an attorney or a doctor or something, and they make good money, or they have a business that makes a lot of money, but they think, man, if I retire, or if I sell my business, okay, I've got some money, but how do I actually create more income? And that's the thing that Wall Street doesn't give you. It's very hard to actually create income through Wall Street. And, you know, and of course there's misalignment of interest. In my book, I talk about all the challenges. I was actually for a while, I was what's called a registered investment advisor, which is, it's somebody who's registered to do, you know, work with people's, you know, investments. But now I call myself an RIA, where I'm a recovering investment advisor. So I've still just changed the same title, just changed what the words mean. But, you just really see that, you know, as you grow your wealth, if you can grow it without taking more of your time, and again, for the person that has the business that has sold it, to know that, hey, I can actually put this into deals that will help me to hedge, to minimize taxes, to grow my wealth, pay for my kids' college, and support my lifestyle, and grow my wealth all at the same time, that's really the skill set. Because again, it's not just... investment is not just, oh, I did this great deal, or I got this hot stock tip and I did this thing. It's the investment that happens in here, right? It's the investment that you invest in yourself. Warren Buffett says, which I quote Warren Buffett a lot, he says, the best investment you can make is in yourself. And so by you learning, by you even investing a small amount, you know, $100,000 is a lot of money to a lot of people. But for some people, if you have a net worth of $10 million, that's not a lot of money, right? It's a very small amount of your total net worth. It gives you some experience in learning what that's like, and kind of seeing how you like it. And also you can kind of take it and run with it and see, okay, I like this element, I like this operator, I didn't like this. But once people realize, oh, this is a muscle I can use, it's really exciting for me to see the light go on and be like, oh, wow, this stuff actually works.
Yeah. And the real estate has that thing, I think, because it's a wealth generator that surprises some people, is that it's kind of got that wealth creep too. And that I realized initially when I was first time I was checking if I was an accredited investor or not, after I had like a small portfolio, and you add up stuff and you're like, oh, wow, like this stuff is really appreciated in value. You know what I mean? And I think it's just because you can't really check it. You can't like log into your account and check what you're worth. So when you actually do it and you put it together, you're like, you see how stuff has appreciated that you've been managing. And it's really fulfilling to see like the whole thing actually working for you, even if it's on a super small scale. Then you know, like, okay, this is the way to go. Now I just have to change my route a little bit or change my direction towards it. And that's one thing that makes, you know, syndication, it's easier for people to make that adjustment into it. And like you, I mean, we do have small investors, and I think that's a normal thing where you're like, single family house, someone's got a duplex, and now they want exposure into a different market, exposure into bigger properties, something that just gives them more time freedom.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's what's really it. I mean, it's creating, I mean, one of the big impetus for me was when I was working, I saw there were two physicians I worked with, and they made over $3 million a year each. They're working 80 hours a week. And so I just saw how they worked, and I was like, man, I don't want to. And then if they didn't show up for the procedure, they didn't go to the thing, which, I mean, that's a lot of money, no matter what you're doing, that's a lot of money. But I'd imagine they were paying a lot in taxes. They're probably paying, you know, 50% or more, especially in California, in taxes. So which is still, you know, 1.5 million take homes, not bad, you know, for a year's work. Right. but at the end of the day, it's just, and I saw this in the medical field, I see it in the law field, I see it especially for professionals, business owners too, but especially professionals, is you just can't take time off. I think in the US, we take on average across any worker in any industry 13 days off a year, including sick time. So that's about 2.5 weeks total. But if you go to Italy, do you know what the average is in Italy? So it's 13 days here.
I don't know. I know it's the most leisurely country in the sense of work. I don't know. I would say it'd be like three times as much. I don't know.
It's actually more than that. It's 42 days, 42 work days. So if you count work weeks, that's 8.5 work weeks. And that's the average. So that means the average person is taking 2.5 months off, you know, of total, if you count weekends and everything, like, which is crazy, right? So it's the idea of, do you live to work or work to live? And so I think, my passion is to help people become financially free, because what it allows you to do is then you can do the things that you really feel like you're here to do. It's something like 70% of people say they don't like their jobs, they're not engaged at work, or they don't want to be doing it. So if I can travel, if I can spend time with family and create memories, if I can write the book that's, you know, if I can write music, if I can contribute to causes that I believe in, if I have time and space to do that. But the problem when you're super busy, you don't have time for that stuff.
Yeah. That's funny what you say about, I've heard that quote before, but I'm a dual citizen with Italy, so like I have a love-hate relationship when I'm there.
So you're feeling conflicted by that. You're like, oh, I'm working too much. I'm not going to work at all. And
I found out the only efficient thing you can do in Italy is order coffee. That's like the most efficient system that they have there. It puts America to bed with how they operate there. I'm like, if they could just do the rest of this country how people do their coffee here, this place would be the most successful place ever. But
they got their priorities right, where the coffee is the most important thing there, right?
yeah. So give us an overview of your company. I mean, kind of what you invest into, what is your strategy, and what's your firm's overall role in those projects when you partner with people?
Yeah. So basically we, like you mentioned on my bio, we have over $200 million in multifamily. We love real estate because it provides like a lot of the, you know, benefits I mentioned. You use leverage, you get tax benefits, you get cash flow, you get appreciation, you get a lot of, you know, there's such a need for it. It's very understandable. About 2 years ago, we shifted to do a lot more things outside of real estate. So we're partnered. A big thing we're doing is ATM machine investing, which we have the fourth largest operator of ATM machines in the country. And so, you know, it's surprising. A lot, the hardest part about this deal is actually convincing people that don't use ATMs like you and I, that there's like this big segment of the population, it's actually 10% of the US population that doesn't even have a bank account. I mean, just think about like you have a bank account, you use it, you have your card, even if you don't go to the bank, you have a bank account. This group doesn't, 10%. So, you know, if the US has over 300 million, that means 30 million people don't have a bank account. So what are they doing? They're using cash, they're using prepaid debit cards, those are the things that they do, and they're not considered, you know, bankable. They just don't have income, they don't want to pay fees, you know, those kind of things. If you have income, you have direct deposit, you have a lot of money in there, banks are great. If you don't have a lot, they're not really friendly to people. So people are using ATM funds for those kind of things. We also do oil and gas. We've got a senior housing project we're working on. We've got other things that we've done just kind of all across. We had kind of a venture deal in the energy space that we were involved with. We're doing a debt fund. So we've got a lot of things that we're doing. We're also looking into a group that is really good at buying businesses, buying small businesses for cash flow. There's some incredible returns there if you can do it right. Kind of the private equity world. So we're looking into that. We're doing car washes. So we've done a lot of things. So again, for different reasons, some for tax reasons, some for cash flow reasons. I'm a big fan that I used to think, you know, I always ask this question, what's more important to you as an investor? So when I have an investor call, I say, is it appreciation or is it cash flow? Right. And it was kind of like, oh, a little bit both, whatever. And then it's kind of like, I've become such a cash flow guy that it's like cash flow is the thing that actually allows you to fire yourself. It allows you to quit your job, right? You can actually cover your living expenses. Once you cover your living expenses or what they call your rat race number, you're free. You don't have to work anymore. You can choose. Do I want to do this? Do I not? And even if you don't want to leave, just knowing that that's the case is amazing. So it's much harder to cover your full income and maybe initially, but if you can at first just cover your living expenses, that's a big deal. So we look for things that do that. We look for things that provide different benefits to investors. And there's obviously many different ways to do that.
Yeah. That's, I always like, my dad's like a cash flow investor as well. And it's something that I call him more of like an old school investor. And my dad would only do numbers off like the cash flow when he bought properties. You know, he didn't even know what IRR meant or anything like this, which is, you know, all cap rate, all this kind of stuff. It was all about like working out cash flow for the properties, if that percentage for him would work. And it works for, I mean, it works. It's a work, you know what I mean? It's obviously not the most technical way of doing it, but, you know, it works. And like a lot of, that's one thing we have when I work with investors that are like that, and they invest in our funds. You just kind of have to explain to them and set the priorities of how the cash flow starts. It's a little different than if you bought a property and maybe you're cash flowing in 2 months. You know what I mean? We're doing major renovations to the property. We're kind of taking a business, disrupting it, and then putting it back together, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's amazing. And that's the thing I think about real estate is that it is very understandable. Like you said, your dad didn't understand IRR and some of these complex metrics we use, but does it cash flow? You know, any investment, if it cash flows and you have, you know, sustainable debt or you have no debt, it's like, that's a great investment. Because again, you have much less things. I mean, what can go wrong? As long as you manage it okay, you're managing it well, there's enough cash flow there, you're going to be in good shape. And these days I find there are deals with real estate that cash flow. It's just gotten harder to find that. I think it will change. And I think right now we'll look back and say, man, I wish I'd bought more right now, a lot more multifamily right now. And that's the challenge. It's the best time to buy is the time where there's the maximum amount of pessimism, which I think we're kind of about there. I mean, it's really, you know, we're raising millions and millions for multifamily. Now it's like hard to raise half a million. Like it's harder to get there just because of investor sentiment, but it really is a counterintuitive thing where it's the being fearful when others are greedy and vice versa. And so, but a lot of investors just are a little wary right now in general.
Yeah. It's the same thing with banks too. You know, the best loans are done in the worst of times and vice versa when you're in real estate. And it's just banks don't realize that when they should have been loaning like crazy in 2009 and 2010, not like in 2019 or 2022. You know what I mean? So it's just how human nature, but it just continues. So, but getting more into what you're working on, I find it great that you have this stat that you've spoken to over 1,500 investors. That's awesome. I imagine you've found some similarities between people you worked with. Can you kind of share some of those with us, what you have from speaking to 1,500 investors and maybe what some of the most successful investors have in common?
Yeah, so there's a few things. It is interesting after you get on a call with a lot of people, you kind of start to, there's kind of a joke, you know, if anybody's ever waited tables, we used to always kind of like stereotype people that, you know, if they came in and they were really rude, then they were like this kind of person. Or if, you know, if they would sit at your table for like 2 hours, they were considered campers because they would just like sit there the whole time. Oh, I got some campers at my table. You know, so you kind of like, so it's funny, you know, there's not necessarily someone next to me I'm kind of talking and sharing this with. But in general, I would say, it's amazing. It's been an amazing opportunity just from a personal growth standpoint to have this interview where I can ask questions to people that are almost all millionaires, right? That's incredible. Just start asking, what's important to you? What are you doing? Why are they doing this? And the amazing thing is that they're actually having this call, right? They have typically more than enough money for themselves, but they're trying to figure out ways to grow their wealth. And actually I look at it, like we said, it's also an investment in learning. They can invest in, kind of learning, hey, is this a good fit? Is it not? Am I going to learn, you know, what kind of things are they working on? Whatever, they're continually working on their deal flow. And they're also working on really trying to grow their mind. You know, like what about this is something that's interesting. Also people are typically very busy. You know, a lot of people that are wealthy are very busy people. Even if they're not busy, they value their time. And so a lot of people, they put a high value to this call to learn about investments. And one of the big concerns is reducing taxes. So like I mentioned, you know, physicians or people, professionals that make a lot of money are paying over 50% a year, depending on if you have a state income tax or not. And again, I'm not a tax person, but there are tax strategists that are fee-based tax strategy people that can help we've got referrals to those and they're amazing. And they can say, I've seen one where, you know, they've just really dramatically, actually a couple of scenarios, and I talk about some of my book, where they've just dramatically helped people to pay zero taxes or almost zero taxes. And it's incredible. And so, so there's some different opportunities there. So I think that those are a couple of things. Another one is just, you know, how can I grow wealth? How can I start creating cash flow? Now, something can sound a little too good to be true when someone says, oh yeah, this deal returns 15% per year and it's conservative, whatever. And they're like, I'm not getting that in my stocks. Like what? I'm not getting that in anything else. Like how is that real? Like, is this right? And a lot of times when, you know, someone doesn't know, or maybe they've heard from a friend, but they're like, this still sounds a little bit weird. So a lot of people are just kind of checking it out. And we do metrics on our calls of like how many people we speak with actually invested. It's around 17% of the calls that we have actually converted to somebody actually investing. The average investment size, it depends on the minimums per deal, but typically about 120,000. So it just kind of varies, right? It depends on the specific deal, but those are all important things and they're all interesting things. But again, I think the thing that strikes me the most is just that these are people that typically sometimes are very, very wealthy and they are all they're taking time out to have a call to learn about our deals, right? And I'm sure that you have the same as well, is that they find value in trying to learn about what deals are out there. And the challenge and the possibility of kind of what we do is that we have things that people can't just get on Wall Street. They can't get, they're not publicly traded. And so it requires that people are doing this level of networking and asking around and finding, and I'll have deals that come to me through my network. And I'm like, huh, that's a really good deal. I mean, if I say no to, like, I'm sure you do as well. I say no to a lot of deals, you make a lot of offers, whatever, but we say no to probably 98% of deals that come around. But once in a while, there's something comes around. Hey, this is really interesting. It's an interesting team. There's a lot to this I like. And you really try to develop and see what that looks like. So I guess those are a few things that I've noticed from those calls.
Do you have money sitting in the stock market and you're worried about it? Or worse, you have money sitting at the bank, not keeping up with inflation? My name is Charles Carrillo, founder and managing partner of Harborside Partners. And since 2006, I've been investing my money and my family's money into income-producing properties. These are real assets, real properties with real addresses that produce real cash flow. At Harborside Partners, we provide passive investors who love real estate with a turnkey investing solution. If you want to put your money to work in real estate but can't find deals, don't have the time to get funding, and the last thing that productive people want to do is manage real estate. We find the deals, we fund the deals, and we manage the tenants, the termites, and the properties. Partner with us at investwithharborside.com. That's investwithharborside.com. Go to investwithharborside.com. If you love real estate, you like the idea of passive income, and believe that income-producing properties will appreciate over time, go to investwithharborside.com. That's investwithharborside.com. So when you're teasing out this information from investors, this is probably, like, for us, it's a 30-minute call. Can you share some of, like, the specific questions you might ask new investors that are important to really figuring out where someone is in their investing journey and if they're going to be a fit for what you do?
Yeah. So for anybody that raises money, these are things, and these are questions that I think are good to kind of ask yourself as well, if you're just to kind of understand someone's goals. But I always ask, how'd you hear about our group? I mean, that's kind of a compliance thing as well, because it's just helpful to know if they saw us online or if we get referred by a friend or it was on a webinar, just to know where that came from. So that if it's, from a lead perspective, that's really helpful to know. And so I'll make a note of that. And I take notes on all this. I type them in and then I'll ask, well, tell me about your work experience and also any investing experience, right? Because then you'll learn, okay, if they're a physician and they, have invested in 30 syndications, well, you're probably going to have, because of that real estate experience, you're going to have a lot of, really specific things. Likely they're going to have talk about cap rate reversions at exit. And they're going to talk about, lots of more complex things versus somebody who's never invested in a syndication. That's just going to be a much more basic conversation about who you are and what you do and just kind of keeping it real simple. So, and then, sometimes I'll ask if somebody's had a lot of experience, I'll ask them, well, what does the perfect deal look like for you? Right. What does that deal look like for you? And I'll try to get a sense of what are their goals. And I'll always ask the question, what's more important, cash flow or appreciation? So somebody who has enough income coming in typically, or they're really wealthy, they'll be like, oh, appreciation, it doesn't really matter, whatever. Somebody who's like, I want to leave my job within a couple of years, like cash flow should be really important. And it sounds like I've been saying, well, it sounds like cash flow would be really important because it'll allow you to do this, right? And so on, is making those connections for people. And the call, goal of a call like that is not just to sell somebody something, it's to really figure out what they need and then try to add value. And then if it works to work together, great. If they join us on a project, they're going to be better off, hopefully. If they don't, then hopefully they'll find another project. But I just want to be somebody who can be a person of value. So anybody who's trying to raise money or kind of be involved in this industry, it's just about all about adding value. Just as like on this show, you're adding value to people, right? And so those are a couple questions. Another one I ask is, are you accredited? Is it by net worth or income? I'll try to get some sense of their financial, like where they're at financially. And then I'll just, at the end, I'll kind of say, this is kind of what we do. We buy this type of property. We do these types of deals. Does this fit your parameters? And now we're doing such a broad range of things, so it's not quite as applicable, but I'll just kind of get that from them. And then I'll save all that. And then I'll just kind of say, okay, well, thanks for that information about yourself. This is what we do. And then I'll explain, and then I'll try to tailor it to what they want. So if they're more cash flow, then I'll kind of present some more cash flow options for them. If they're more long-term appreciation or they don't care or they need tax reduction, I'll try to present something for them. And so, it's just, I think that's really a good way to go. Just ask a bunch of questions, try to figure out who they are, where they want to go, why they set the call up. And then is it something that we can help them with?
Yeah, no, that's great. That's a great way of running a call and getting the information you need, because obviously we have a lot of compliance with SEC. You want to make sure that you're taking money from people that have money to lose, as our 100 pages of legal documents that each of these deals has tells you over and over again. And it's important to ask those questions and figure out where people's heads at. And then it gives you an idea too of what kind of deals that you can speak to your partners about. Maybe someone that wants doesn't need cash flow right away. Maybe they have some deals that are maybe a little bit more heavy value add or something like this that's going to take more time to kind of right the ship on. And you might have investors that are interested in participating, something like that. So that's great. A lot of great information. I imagine when you've spoken to new investors, there's been some misconceptions about passive investing, about investing in real estate deals. What are some common misconceptions that past investors have about investing in real estate deals that you've probably heard over the years of raising money?
Some people, just expectations. It's like, sometimes people will say, well, I want cash flow day one, or, you know, I want a distribution. Is it monthly? Is it right now? And we have seen deals. But the challenge is I've seen some operators, they raise too much money for a value add deal so that they can start paying distributions like the first quarter, first month. And in a way, you're kind of overcharging investors to kind of give them back their own money or have a psychological perception that like things are coming back. So that's an interesting thing I've seen. But you know, sometimes again, it's just really coming down to the right expectations of what people want. I've had some calls where, and one, you know, a couple I can think of where, you know, one guy had a PhD in something related to real estate and he had a negative net worth from his student loans and he wanted to invest. And I was like, well, hold on, like, how do you, so it's funny how, like, I met people that like didn't even really finish high school and they've got millions of dollars. And this guy's like, you know, more educated than anybody, you know, he doesn't have anything. He's like minus 200K in net worth. And I'm like, well, you can't really invest with, like, you can't do that. So, and then sometimes people say, well, you know, I've got 100K and that's my total net worth and I want to put 50K into a deal. And I'm like, you know, I'm sorry, we really can't do that. It's got to be, we kind of generally have a rule. It can't be more than like a quarter of someone's net worth for any one deal. And that's a lot. And then we kind of talk it through. And, you know, once in a while we've done something like that, but it's just, you know, we just don't want to put somebody in a situation where it really, you know, it just doesn't serve them. And that's a challenge. You know, people have different levels of risk tolerance. That's one of the things I learned as an investment advisor. And, you know, some people would say, hey, I've got, you know, $5 million in the bank and I'm ready to fire myself. And like a month before retirement, they're like, okay, now I fired myself, you know? And it's like, okay, that's a pretty safe way to do it. Other people are like, they have no money and they, you know, they go into debt to buy a coaching program or they're going to go do real estate and they go into debt and they do it. And, you know, some of them do, they burn the boats and they quit the job and they go, and, but you know, that's not always the wisest thing, right? So everybody's a little different, but it's just really interesting to see the variety of kind of what brings people to real estate. And I find in general, the people that we work well with are kind of like yourself, you know, very collaborative, very, hey, how can we add value? If I can help you, and I'll even start a call. Hey, this is generally how we do these calls. We usually kind of talk about passive investing. We learn about you and where you're at and ask you some questions. And then afterwards you have time to ask any questions you have. And does that sound like a good plan? And so they can agree to that. If not, it's like, no, I want to talk about, you know, that, you know, they want to talk about raising money. Okay, great. Let's talk about that. You know, let's have a conversation. So it's just kind of getting on the same page of what someone really wants. And either, you know, in the beginning, you either have time or you have money. So if you have money, you can just start investing passively, which is, I think we should all aspire to that, be full-time passive investors. If you have time, then you can leverage your time. Or like for me, maybe you don't have a lot of time, but you're going to make the time because you don't have the money to do it. So that's kind of a side hustle to get it going. So so I think there's a lot of ways and a lot of things that people, you know, come to real estate for, but I think those are a few.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great way of doing it. I had a mentor years back that told me not to invest more than 5% of my net worth into any single deal. And obviously that's a little tougher and I broke that many times as a younger investor, but that's something that I've successfully done for the last few years, held between that. And I'd even scale that down more with even like if I do an angel investment or something like that, it's going to be like less than 1%. But it's like, you know, you just, as the risk goes, you just, with real estate, it's like, you know, safely do 5%. So when you're speaking to someone and you think that they might be getting over that 10 or 15%, whatever, like you said, 25%, you know, you got to ask a little bit more questions and see exactly what their knowledge is on it. You know what I mean? Because you don't want to be getting these calls. You got a deal that's going well, but it's going to go 6 years and they need that money back in four and they never told you. I mean, that's going to be a tough conversation and you're going to have to figure out a way of buying them out or doing something. And it's a situation you don't really want to get into, but you know, it comes up when I speak to some larger operators out there.
Yeah. And we've had, you know, just to be transparent too, I mean, I always like when people share, you know, and you know, I know you guys, your deals have all gone well all the time. We've had a couple of deals that have really struggled with interest rates, you know, having some bridge debt, and there's one area of Atlanta where 2 years from, you know, 24 months, year over, you know, from 2 years earlier to now, I mean, the value of properties in general has gone down 42% in that submarket. So, you know, if you have that, no matter what kind of value add you did, if you put, you know, 20, 30% down and you have bridge debt and you've got to refinance, you're in trouble because there's negative equity there. You don't have the equity there. And so I have, you know, you get these calls sometimes from an investor who's, you know, like, hey, you know, their net worth's 500K, but they're, you know, close to retirement and they're like, hey, I really need this money. And what's, you know, can you buy me out? Whatever. And it's like, so this is part of the investment process and it's unclear what's going to happen there. Right. And it's a really challenging thing. We don't really talk about it as much as operators or capital people, but there is the other side of it too. We want to make sure that when and if something happens and there is a challenge, there is something uncertain, or there could be a potential loss, that it doesn't. And of course, nobody wants to lose or, you know, be in a position where they're losing anything. I didn't want to lose anything, but you know, it kind of gives you a little more perspective when kind of looking back to the conversation. Okay, you know, just going back to like, I think, you know, for this person, it was okay to take and just kind of specify, hey, these are the risks here or whatever. But it, you know, stuff will happen sometimes in deals. You know, there's no such thing as a 100% secure investment, right? Everything involves risk. And I think that just really making sure that we're stewarding people well. We're really, before I was in medical sales, I was a youth pastor for like 4 or 5 years. And the idea of like pastor is like a shepherd, right? So how do you shepherd people with their finances? Yeah, that's kind of what I feel like I do as well. And sometimes it's telling them no. Sometimes it's saying, you know what, I just think maybe this isn't the best thing for you. Maybe some other type of investment, or just wait, save for a little longer. You know, I think that's the part of this that's challenging, as well as it gives us growth opportunities to continue to have conversations and really try to help people, and we're all growing. So,
yeah, I've done it many times where I've lowered the amount someone's investing, and just being like, yeah, you know, since new to you, maybe, you know what I mean? And I had it with my second or third investor, who's someone I knew for years. And I was like, you know, just I think you should invest like half. And, you know, did really well the investment, but it's something's like, you don't even understand, you know what I mean? Like, so it's just, I think it's better if you come in, and they agreed with it. And it was something that I actually, I was speaking to my wife. I remember we were walking, and before doing it, I was like, I'm just going to reach out and tell them not to, you know what I mean? Because it was something I never told my investors, cause I never told the investor group I was working with, cause they probably needed that extra money at that point on our first deal. But it was something that, you know, you have to do the right thing, and you have to make sure, this is a long-term partnership. I mean, they go many, many years, or they're supposed to. I mean, in a normal market, not in what we've gone through over the last, say, 4 out of 6 years. So as we're finishing up here, what mistakes should passive or active investors avoid when investing in syndication deals, or maybe common mistakes when in syndication deals or real estate in general that maybe you see you come across in all the years of doing this, from single family all the way up to what you're doing now?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few. I think one is that, you know, we think things are passive when they're not. Owning a rental house, in my opinion, is never passive. Even if you got a good renter and they've been there for years, you're still involved. It still takes headspace. There's still a lot going on there that you're involved with typically. And then, you know, I think one of the biggest things I see for a lot of people just starting out is the analysis paralysis, right? They look at it, they'll kick the tire. Well, I don't know. And then they decide that they're just not going to do it. And so what I tell people, and I have a system in my book where it talks about giving yourself a time goal of like, okay, I'll give myself 60 days. I'm going to get on people's investor list. I'm going to get on Charles' list. I'm going to get on, you know, Bronson's list. I'm going to call these other groups and get on there, hear about their investment deals. And then within the next 60 days, by this date, I'm going to invest in something, either one or two deals. And, you know, the deals will probably go fine. But the biggest thing is you're going to learn. And because you actually are kind of the idea of being in the arena, right? When you're in the crowds, you're in the stands watching the game, that's very different than being on the court playing the game. And when you're invested and you have money in there, you're actually playing the game. Even though you're passive, you're still, your money's there. I pay attention when I'm invested to something. So I think for anybody who's just kind of looking at all this saying, hey, this looks great, whatever, you know, I think it takes action. I mean, I tell a story, I run a meetup in LA area. And, you know, I tell the story, I went to meetups for over six years, and I didn't do anything. I had one rental house. And I just kind of would go to the meetups and didn't really do anything. And it wasn't until I actually made a decision that I'm going to leave my job in a few years that I just started taking a lot of action, that things started to change in my life. Right. So I think it really takes both making a decision and taking action. And I think a lot of people get stuck in the inaction. Yeah, so I do have a podcast called The Mailbox Money Show. It's anywhere you get your podcasts, and we talk about all different things. We just had you on there recently. We talk about things real estate. We talk about alternatives. We talk about inflation, all kinds of stuff. You can also check out, I'm on all the social medias, Bronson Hill. You go to my website, bronsonequity.com. You can hear about, I have my new book that's available. It's also on Amazon called Fire Yourself. And then we have our investment club as well. But I really enjoyed being here today, Charles. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Looking forward to connecting with you here in the near future.
Sounds great, man. Thank you.
Hi, guys. It's Charles from the Global Investors Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're interested in getting involved with real estate, but you don't know where to begin, set up a free 30-minute strategy call with me at ScheduledCharles.com. That's ScheduledCharles.com. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Global Investor Podcast. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe on iTunes or Google Play to get new weekly episodes. For more resources and to receive our newsletter, please visit globalinvestorpodcast.com. And don't forget to join us next week for another episode.
Nothing in this episode should be considered specific, personal, or professional advice. Any investment opportunities mentioned on this podcast are limited to accredited investors. Any investments will only be made with proper disclosure, subscription documentation, and are subject to all applicable laws. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, financial, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own. Information is not guaranteed. All investment strategies have the potential for profit or loss. The host is operating on behalf of Syndication Superstars, LLC, exclusively.